Here's a poem from a long time ago. Lifting the veil. Past the chaos of the primal sea, past the ordered world of earth, fire, water, and air, past the joining of opposites, darkness and light, past the sanctity of ritual and the calling out of prayer, hangs a veil. Made of dream-woven fantasies, and we are caught in its shimmering silken strands. There is no longing that does not seek the lifting of that veil. In September 63, before the current era, Pompey took Jerusalem. He stormed the temple, the court of priests. He raised his hand to tear back the veil, to enter the Devir, the Holy of Holies. He found an empty room. Nothing was there but the Invisible One. The brave general turned and fled. And nothing is real but the Invisible One, the one who burned on the holy mountaintop, the one who flowed in the waters of Jordan, who whispered in the wind of a lonely desert cave, the one who lies concealed, revealed only by the opening of the heart. Who can take what he cannot see? Lift the veil gently, in purity, in silence. We find what we bring. The heart knows. Thank you, everyone, for your practice. Okay, let's get started. So, I wrote that poem that I read you. I think it must be over 30 years now. And when I look back on it, I was asking myself, what did I know then? What was my view of reality? I was meditating. I was doing Sufi practices and spending time at a yoga ashram north of Montreal. So it was a spiritual viewpoint. But I can't remember exactly how I saw things. So it was interesting to read what I wrote then. The veil was clear to me. That was our conditioning that causes us to look through a veil of illusion. But the line that really struck me was, there is no longing that does not seek the lifting of that veil. What was the longing that I was talking about then? And I obviously it was not a longing for, you know, ice cream and movies. But I think it was a longing to see things clearly, right? Which I still have. So here I am. And the truth is that we humans do not very often see things clearly. We think a lot. We love to think. And we create our worlds according to our thoughts, which are often misguided, according to our misperceptions. And this human situation has been addressed in many, if not all, of the wisdom traditions of the world. I mean, well, for example, St. Paul's letter to the Corinthians. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as also I am known. And then something else I thought of recently, the allegory of the cave in Plato's Republic, where these prisoners are like chained in this cave, and all they can see is one wall of the cave, and there are people behind them and a light behind them, and these people are casting shadows on the wall, And the prisoners think that is reality. And then if somebody gets out and discovers that they've been lied to, they want to go back and convince the prisoners, tell them what's happening. And the prisoners often resist. They don't want to change their view. Another one that I thought of recently is Rumi and his metaphor of the tavern. And it's like he and all these other people who are in the tavern are they're drunk, they're intoxicated. So they can't see things clearly, but Rumi knows that there is another reality. There is another reality. He doesn't know how to get there, but he knows it has something to do with letting go of the self. And so this is what they all have in common. And this is just a sample, many, many more. What they all have in common is that we don't see things clearly, but there is a way to do so somehow. And it involves some letting go of our conditioning. And so that brings us to Yata Bhuta Nana Dasana, which is our topic for the month. Yata Bhuta means how things really are. Nana means knowledge, and dasana means seeing. So it's been translated as knowledge and vision of things as they are. And for those of you who've been with us all year, you know that we are looking at transcendental dependent arising this year, which is this sequence of mind states that we can go through to get from suffering, dukkha, to final liberation. And so we have reached the stage of seeing clearly, seeing things as they are. And each of these sequences of mind states is dependent on the one that comes before it. That's why it's called dependent arising. So it is concentration comes before this one. So seeing things clearly depends upon having a concentrated mind. And before concentration came happiness and tranquility. So basically, it is the tranquil, happy, concentrated mind that sees clearly, right? And obviously, we are not talking about physical seeing, you know, the sense gate of vision. We're talking about insight, awareness. I recently listened to a talk by Donald Rothberg, who is a teacher at Spirit Rock, and he said that he felt that should have been translated as seeing things as they arise, because seeing things as they are almost gives it an illusion of permanence. But seeing things as they arise emphasizes the impermanence of all of these things that we're seeing. So he would translate it as what we know and see directly as they arise, right? And actually, Carrie elaborated on this a bit in her talk Monday night. If you didn't hear it, I really recommend you listen to it when it reaches the website. Okay, so how do we let go of our conditioning? That is the big question that I have been asking. And so Donald Rothberg says, we have to be with experience as directly as possible. And he tells the story of Bahia in the Bahia Sutta. And Bahia was this guy who, in the Buddha's time, he was meditating, he was doing spiritual practices, but he felt like he wasn't getting anywhere. And so he's asking people about this, and they say, well, why don't you go to the Buddha and ask for instructions? So he does. And the Buddha says, well, I'm busy right now. And so he has to ask three times. And I discovered that in that day, the tradition was, if you ask three times, then you're serious, right? So the Buddha finally said, okay. And this is what he told him. Then, Bahia, you should train yourself thus. In reference to the seen, there will be only the seen. In reference to the heard, only the heard. In reference to the sensed, only the sensed. In reference to the cognized, only the cognized. That is how you should train yourself. When for you there would be only the seen in reference to the seen, etc., then, Bahia, there is no you in connection with that. When there is no you in connection with that, there is no you there. When there is no you there, you are neither here nor yonder nor between the two. This, just this, is the end of stress. So once again, we are being told to be present with what is, and the self will disappear. And, you know, it really has occurred to me, to the human mind, being told to be present is really radical. You know, and it really is radical, because in the sense of the actual sense of the word radical, because it's going to the root of the human experience. Nothing happens except in the present. And yet the mind wants to be anywhere else. Anywhere else. That is a very interesting situation that we have to work with. Anyway, so Rothberg also says that to understand clear vision on a deep level, which is what we want, we have to understand the three core insights of the Buddha's teaching, the three characteristics, as we call them, which are suffering or dukkha, impermanence or anicca, and non-self, anatta. And so he does talk a bit about how to work with these three characteristics, which I found interesting. He says, he starts with suffering. It all starts with suffering, right? This whole sequence of mind states starts with suffering. And he says, yes, we have to focus on what suffering actually feels like, but we also need to be aware that the human mind doesn't want to focus on suffering. The human mind wants to say, let this difficulty go away and then I'll be present, right? I don't want to deal with that. So we have to not only feel what suffering feels like, we have to study the wanting and the aversion and our, you know, the fact that we don't want to be with this suffering, and what does that feel like? And actually being with how the suffering feels opens us up to the subtle roots of suffering, which are, of course, our wanting and aversion. And then to work with impermanence, he says, yes, notice impermanence from moment to moment. That is easy. But also, we need to become aware of how we try to create a sense of permanence around things, because impermanence can make us very uneasy. And so we try to make a thought or an opinion solid. We try to create a bubble of reality based on language and concepts, anything to create a sense of permanence. But all we have to do is look at the world, look at the wind and the trees, you know, and we can see that everything is arising and passing away, including our thoughts and our opinions, no matter how we cling to them. And then he says to work with non-self, to watch for experiences when the sense of self gets big. How important is it to look good, right? How attached are we to our opinions? That's a big one for me. I have this friend. I've been friends with her for over 50 years, and she's a dear friend. But we get into these subtle little arguments, And especially, and often we do it through text conversations these days. And I cannot tell you how many times I have found myself thinking, okay, I've got to respond to this because I now have the argument that will convince her that she is wrong and I am right. And she is doing, of course, the same exact thing. And in over 50 years, we have probably never convinced each other of anything. And yet we still do it. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about opinions lately because I'm looking at the world and I see how dangerous opinions can be. And I've realized lately that the legacy media, the corporate media, is beginning to lose some of their power. But now what it is these influencers. They call them influencers on the internet, and they have blogs and they have Instagram accounts and they have YouTube videos, and they have, many of these influencers have more readers, far more readers than the New York Times, right? These are the opinion makers now. And it doesn't matter how crazy an opinion is, you will find it reinforced online. So I'm really trying to pay a lot of attention to my opinions and how attached I am to my opinions. And I am also lately trying to become much more aware of how often I do not see clearly. And in fact, I have been looking for clues that tell me I'm not seeing clearly. And as a good student of Buddhism, I have made a list, which I will share with you, a list of clues that I am not seeing clearly. Okay. Number one, is my mind telling me a story, especially a story that it wants to repeat over and over and over? Number two, is my mind stewing around in the past or fretting about the future? Number three, are any of the hindrances present? Sensual desire, ill will, sloth, restlessness, and doubt, or any strong emotions like fear, anxiety, wanting? Any of these strong emotions cloud the vision, right? Four, am I making assumptions about a person or a situation? And we were just talking before in the, before the sit started, how many times lately I have realized that I have made assumptions about a person or a situation that is completely wrong. Completely wrong. Okay, number five. Do I have an expectation or a preference about how something will turn out? In other words, a clinging or an aversion. Number six. How attached am I to my opinion or position? And number seven. What is my sense of self? At the moment, am I thinking, oh, I'm so great, everybody loves me, or I'm so awful, everybody hates me, and I can go from one to the other in 5 minutes, right? Or to what extent am I identifying with my roles? For example, right now, to what extent am I identifying with my role as teacher? It's a good question. So these are all clues that I'm not seeing clearly at any given moment. And they also are clues that there may be something I need to deal with, right? There may be thoughts or feelings or reactions that I need to sit with before I can become happy and concentrated, right? And this is probably not a complete list. I expect there will be things added, and I would be very interested to hear if any of you have other clues, right? Okay, so what is it like to see clearly? Well, I was talking to my friend, the same friend that I have the arguments with, the other day about this very topic. She's not a student of Buddhism, but she is a very reflective person and very interested in all of these questions. And she says, well, what do you do about the fact that everybody sees things from a different perspective? You know, any given situation, everybody is seeing it differently. It's like the elephant in the dark room, where, you know, somebody's got hold of the trunk and somebody's got hold of the leg and the ear, and they're all trying to say what an elephant is. And so I was thinking about that, because it's true. It's absolutely true. And I didn't really get a chance to answer her. We got distracted by something, but I thought about it for some time because it's true. How do you see any situation clearly when you're only seeing it from your own perspective? So I decided that first of all, is to understand I'm seeing this from my own perspective and everybody else is, but that it's really not so much, it's not so much the details of a particular situation. It is the understanding that, first of all, we are each seeing it from our own perspective, but also the understanding that whatever the situation is, it's impermanent. Whatever the situation is, it's impersonal. It is not about me and my little self. And whatever the situation is, I can create suffering only if I'm clinging to a certain outcome, right? So, do I ever see clearly? I'm beginning to wonder, right? And I think sometimes I do, but I think more often than not, I have to work through some stuff before I get there. And in fact, it seems to me that I might even see more clearly when I have worked through some stuff. And for example, okay, recently in June, in fact, I had an entire week of total discontent and irritation because I had spent a week with my kids, my sons and their wives and my grandson, and I could not help but think of Ram Dass saying, if you think you're enlightened, go spend a week with your relatives, right? Well, I did that. And it was a lovely week in many ways. It was my grandson's graduation from high school. He's a great kid. He's done really well. It was a big celebration, lots of events. Everything went well. But, and I've talked to some of you about this, I began to realize that, or at least I began to perceive that my kids were treating me as though I was too old to be of any use anymore. That, well, you know, we had all these things to carry to the car. Oh, no, you can't carry that. That's too heavy for you, you know. And at one point, I was going to help prepare dinner. And my daughter-in-law, my younger son's wife, and he and my younger son were standing at the sink, and I was going to cut up vegetables, and I heard my daughter-in-law say, should Judith be using a sharp knife? And she didn't think I heard her because I'm old, right? But I did. And I said, what? How do you think I cut up vegetables, right? And my older son, to be fair, did stick up for me in that one. And he said, Judith has sharp knives, and he got a knife and sharpened it and gave it to me. But oh, but when I got home, I was just full of lectures, right, to give my kids, lecture that I never will give them. And finally, after a week of this, I decided, okay, I need to see what's going on here. So one late afternoon, early evening, sunny day, right? I was sitting out on my patio and I just started sitting with all this irritation and all this discontent. And finally, things started to calm and I started to have some insights. First of all, I realized that there are also perks to being old. For example, at my son's house where we were staying in Seattle, there are two places for guests to sleep. There is a bedroom upstairs that is across from the bathroom, and then there is a bed down in the basement where you have to go up and down the stairs to go to a bathroom. Well, I got the good bedroom opposite the bathroom because I'm old, right? And then also, I had taken the Amtrak bus down there because they had parking problems and they didn't need my car. And so the day I was going home, my daughter-in-law said, "Okay, I'm going to take you, but I have a doctor's appointment at 9, so I need to take you a little early." And I said, "Fine, I'll just sit in the station and, read and whatever." So we got to the Amtrak station and it was completely blocked off. You could walk in to get a train, but you could not drive in, and the bus couldn't drive in, and no sign, nothing telling you where the bus was going to pick me up. So she said, in spite of her doctor's appointment, she goes, she parks her car, she takes my heavy suitcase, drags it through the streets of Seattle, goes there, finds out where the bus is, drags my suitcase over there, and I'm just following along like a little puppy, And she gets me there, and she doesn't want to leave. "Oh, I hate to have to leave you." I said, "That's okay, it's okay. You've got a doctor's appointment." And I realized I wouldn't have gotten that kind of treatment if I wasn't old and her mother-in-law, right? And I liked that. So I realized, okay, there's, a little bit of a double standard here. And then I started thinking about some of the things that my kids have been going through with aging relatives. And there have been several who have lost function and died in the last several years. And I fell and broke my arm in December. And even though it healed really well, I'm sure it made me seem a little more frail to them, right? And so then I just sat again with it, and then I began to become aware of my own impermanence through the eyes of my kids. And that was very disturbing, very disturbing. And I realized how much ego I have involved in being strong and capable, right? And how much ego I have involved in being able to do some things that other people my age can't do, right? So I just continued sitting with it. And finally, the discontent was gone, and I realized these are people who care about me. These are people who love me. Maybe I can just feel the love, And everything began to settle down, and I was just there on my patio, watching the sunlight on the green leaves of my plants. And I realized I am present. I'm here. And there's nothing now but the light on the green leaves slowly fading with the evening. And I knew that finally, it had all been right in front of me. Dukkha, impermanence, non-self, just laid out so conveniently for me to contemplate. And I did. And it all calmed down. And finally, I was seeing clearly. I was seeing clearly. So I want to end by sharing with you my first thought when I was presented with this topic, because I always like to catch my first thought. Because sometimes I have really strong conditioned reactions to certain words, like faith and condition and concentration were two of them, for example. But this time, my first thought was really kind of neat. And it was the chorus of a song. I don't even know the verses, but the chorus came to me. It's a song from 1972, my time, right? By Johnny Nash. And here are the words. I can see clearly now. The rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, 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 sunshiny day. Thank you. Okay, so now we have time for comments and questions, and I'd love to know your experiences with this topic. So, Nina.
Oh, thank you, Judith. Well, that was such an inspiring talk. I really loved your talk today.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, it reminded me of what I had been going through in the past week, too, and seeing my great-grandsons for the first time in 4 years and being with their other family and I love being in Sangha because there's always a validation to what I have been feeling or to what I've been going through in learning the Dharma. And I also appreciate your list. Yes. I will keep it in front of me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Nina. And I know exactly what you mean. Just coming together with people who are having all these same experiences, you know? Yeah.
Well, one more thing I wanted to say.
Yes.
Was it also reminded me to remember that there are two kinds of sits. Oh, maybe not, but for me in my head right now, it's two kind, you know, you're sitting and just meditating to try to calm. And I guess now with the evolution of what we've been learning, it should be more. But then there's also the point that we need to sit with our emotions,
yeah,
and or our difficulties.
Yeah.
And I think we don't learn that in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So, excellent. Thanks.
Yeah, sometimes it's just, there's no way. The mind will not settle until you deal with it. Yeah. Charlotte.
I sure related to what you said about needing to look good. Because when I go to dinner or I go out in the public, everything matches. I have black and white, and I have it's just, and the hat, I have so many hats, and I can find one that matches the outfit. So that, I'm gonna have to think about that a little bit. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, and there's so many different ways in which the self manifests, you know. It just, wow. And sneaky, very sneaky.
Sneaky, sneaky.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Claire.
That was great talk. That was so good. Thank you. It's really good to laugh hard. It really makes the Dharma sink in there fast, I think. I could really relate to your stuff about aging. That was so exactly right on. It was great. So I just listened to a talk by Pema Chodron, and when you were talking, I was thinking, but how do you know when you are seeing clearly? And I mentioned that talk because there were two questions in the talk. One was a woman asking about how to get over this obsession she has with a person. And then there was another woman asking about what to do with a friend who's very negative, and Pema said, you know, just accept that person for who they are. And with the obsession, it was kind of sit with the obsession and, you know, investigate it. So for me, it brings up this thing of like, how do you know what is clear? How do you know what is clearly seeing? Like those two instances kind of, I don't know, do you understand what I'm saying? Those two things just seem maybe like contradictions, or like you have to make a big judgment before you can get there.
Well, yeah, and this is why I started trying to pay attention to what's going on in my mind when I'm not thinking clearly. And how does it feel when it's different? How does it feel when my mind is actually calm and concentrated and happy and tranquil? Because that's the mind that is seeing clearly. And obviously the mind that is, you know, spinning around in stories or, you know, assumptions or expectations is not a calm, concentrated mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think we just continue to work with it.
Simple.
Yeah, it's that's a thing. It's always simple, but it's not easy.
Ah.
Because we are so conditioned to something else. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Faith.
I had more than one thought about this. I love the poem, and I love your talk about aging and children, because I'm there. And I was feeling resentful because my kids just don't seem to notice that I'm aging, because I'm strong and capable. So that's the way I'm supposed to be. And I long for them to lift my suitcase for me. And then when they do, I'll start to think, why are you lifting my suitcase? I can do that for myself. So, that is part of the other things of how we see ourselves and how that is so impermanent, but we try to keep it the same. I think that's really funny. Everything's impermanent. And including my mind, if I let it. That's what I think you're addressing, is allowing our minds to liquefy a little bit, to melt, to be able to change our mind without having to maybe be right and change someone else's mind, because that ain't gonna happen. The other thing that I was struck by was when you talked about seeing clearly, it sounded so much like psychological insight to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what the connection between those two is. This is not for you to answer in 30 seconds or less, but what the connection between those two and how they may be cooperative, but a little different. I'm thinking I might be able to psychologically, I'm very sophisticated, be able to think, I'm getting this, I'm seeing clearly, I'm not judging, okay, blah, you know, all that. But I think there's a different way to see clearly, the way that you talked about when you saw the leaves.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think those two may go together in a way that, or be just slightly different sides of the same bowl.
Yeah, I think in a way I'm not so psychologically sophisticated. It's not something I have studied, but obviously it is, you know, talking about dealing with the stuff that is in your way. And really that's what we're talking about too. The stuff that's in the way of seeing clearly, you know. But I think maybe the difference, I don't know what the difference is, but I do know for this, it's really important to be able to see your mind clearly. That's where it starts, you know, to see what's in the way. At least that for me, that was it. What is in the way of my seeing clearly right now? What assumptions am I making? What expectations do I have? What feelings are there? I know if I am busy giving lectures in my mind to my children that I will never give, I know I'm not seeing clearly, right? Yeah.
Through a tunnel darkly. Yeah. And one more thought that always pops into my head is that when we talk about the self, I'm pretty aware that I'm a cells, not a self. And that at different situations, I'm barely recognizable. So I think that's another thing about seeing clearly is seeing which persona I'm wearing right now.
Yep.
Yeah. And how am I going to fake this one or be real?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah,
it was all so much, not only wonderful, the poem and everything, but so much fun. So thank you very much.
I had fun too. Jerry.
Yeah. Okay. Jerry, that was, huh? Yeah. Thank you, Judith. That was just such a fun talk. I just really enjoyed it. I can identify. I think that's okay to identify. I can really identify with a lot of your stories. And just a couple of thoughts that occurred to me. Yeah. One was, you know, there is a way, yeah, that people, oh, you know, oh, sir, could I help you? Would you like this seat? That, yeah, I can, you know, kind of catch on that. Say, wait a minute, I can handle myself. I can stand here too. But I like reminding myself at those times, say, it's coming from a position of caring.
Right.
Yeah, and people don't always do it well. You know, sometimes that caring comes across as pity, but at least, you know, I like reminding, oh yeah, they're caring about me here. I fell off my bike the other day. A couple of people stopped. Oh, that was nice, actually.
Yeah, it is nice. And the thing is, sometimes we need the help, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And people like helping.
People like helping.
To respond and, you know. Oh yeah, could you carry my? They feel good about that. Just another thing that crossed my mind. You had one comment about you are a teacher. Here you are sitting in front of the room here, in front of the group here, and how you can identify with, oh, I am this teacher, and it occurs to me, I mean, just wouldn't mind a comment here. There is value in that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's times that it helps, especially like a role as a teacher.
Absolutely.
To say, oh, I'm in a position of teaching here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need to, you know, be aware that what I'm saying is taken seriously. It's being taken in as a person who is, you know, knows something about what they're talking about, whether it's Buddhism or whether it's algebra. It's worthwhile to recognize I am sitting here as a teacher here or a parent.
Or a
and
parent.
I need to, you know, up my game and not just be too casual in that regard. It just is a lot that crossed my mind.
Well, I think that it is absolutely important that we know what roles we are playing and that we take them seriously, but how attached are we to them?
Yeah.
You know, how, to what extent do we think that defines us? Because just look back at all the roles that have changed. You know, the roles we used to play and maybe were attached to, and now they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And even being a parent, you know, how much of my role as a parent has changed? Now my kids are parenting me, you know. Yeah. So it's how do we hold it? You know, not, you know, obviously, if we're going to teach something, we need to know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I guess it's
take it seriously.
Identification.
It's the identification and the attachment. And the attachment, yeah.
Anyway, thank you. That was a great talk. I chuckled a number of times.
Thank you, Jerry.
Relating to it. Thank you.
Candace.
I love the talk too. It was just so much fun. And I liked having more details about what was going on in your head for that week. But two things occurred to me when you were asking things that you could add to the list.
Yeah.
And one of them that I've really been trying to pay attention to, because it's a big one for me, is what's my tone of voice when I talk to someone, especially my husband, because, you know, he's captive with me in the house a lot. And I can tell when I'm have the stern voice that there's all kinds of stuff. That's the voice that's in my head right now. Yeah. And that is never clear seeing. When that stern voice comes out of me, it's something's going on. And I go, oh, better go have a timeout.
That's a good one. That's
and
a great
figure
one.
Out, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah.
And the other one is the two, when I'm with pets and children, I really feel they can sense when I'm not really there. When my mind is somewhere, I mean, my cat does not like me grooming her if I'm not totally focused on her and the subtle things that she's telling me that I want to be scratched here. I don't want to be. And kids will just call you out.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so refreshing. And they're like our little teachers.
Yeah.
And so those are the two things I would add to the list. But I just love the poem. I loved the talk, and thanks so much.
Thanks, Candace. Lindell.
Okay, I got myself in here. I loved your talk, too. That was really great. It made me, when you were talking about your kids, I thought about my grandnephew, and one of these times he says, you know, Auntie, you're not so young anymore. You really need to be careful. It's just very cute, you know. but I really appreciated the way how you talked about, you know, these truths of seeing clearly impermanence and dukkha and not self, how there's a level where we really don't want to know these things. You know, we really don't want to know these things. And having to work with that level, with that, with the not wanting to know and the actually recognizing it's true, is a big part of this. And I feel like it's helped me a lot to see them in my meditation practice. I have that insight in meditation practice and go, oh, because when that has happened, there's a level where I know that these things are true. So even if I don't want them to be true, and even if I'm not necessarily admitting to them or seeing them in my daily life, there's some level where I do know that it's true. Mm-hmm. And it sort of eventually kind of surfaces.
Yeah, it's interesting how we do avoid it. And I avoided it for a week until I was driving myself crazy. And I thought, okay. And, you know, okay, I got to deal with this. And then once you sit down and you just let the mind, you know, settle and do it and feel it, it does work itself out. It does. And you do begin to see it in spite of all of the aversions.
The resistance. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks. Lauren.
Yeah, I'm going to just agree with Lindell. That's the point. That's the thing I thought was really helpful that you emphasized. In order to see clearly, we have to see our relationship to those three, you know, what's going on. If we start looking at those three truths, characteristics, and what I find is when they're coming up for me, I'm often telling myself, oh, I must have made a mistake somewhere. I shouldn't be feeling like this. Something, you know, I did something wrong, but not really, because this is the truth. This is underlying everything that I'm, because what is happening, that effort to make everything solid or me look really good, you know, that is dissipating, and this is what's underneath, and it's there. That's the truth. So it's really not something wrong. It's something right.
Yeah.
Yes. So I really appreciated you doing that. And I loved the thing about the knives. Oh, my God. That was cool. Oh, that was so wonderful. And the other thing was the Bahia story, because at the end, I mean, I got tears in my eyes at the end when you saw the sun on the leaves. There was no you in between. And that's, so anyway, bless you for this talk.
Thank you. Shannon. There we go. I think we have time for the two more, Shannon and Lillian. Okay.
Judith, when you finished your talk, my first response was, I want to know this woman more. I like what she has to say, and I can learn from you. So I do really thank you for the talk. These words, that transcendental, dependent, arising, are slippery words for me.
Yes.
They're ambiguous, and I have a hard time pinning them down. It's like nailing water. But the last couple of years, I have had to really take stock of myself and my life. And one of the areas that I decided to learn more about myself, I belong to this group that I belong to off and on, very sporadically, for many years. And I decided to really be a contributor to the group. And so, but the first thing I did when I started attending on a regular basis is I kept my mouth shut, because it wasn't about me. It was about them and learning about these other women, as well as learning about the roles I would have automatically taken if I allowed myself to speak. And this is so slippery for me that I hope this applies to what you're saying, but it seems like, you know, I'm really trying to see, to witness how other people are around me in response to me, and what that brings up in me. And it's been a very fruitful experience for me. Thank you very much.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's great. And it's always interesting to go against the grain of your own tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a person that talks a lot, to not talk.
Right.
Or a person who never talks, to talk.
Yes. Yes. And I'm a person that I fall into the teacher role quite readily.
Uh-huh.
And having to step back and tell myself, no, you're not in the teacher role here. You are a participant. And just sit and watch. And it's amazing how hard that's been.
If it's hard, it's probably good, right?
Yeah.
I had an ex-brother-in-law who used to say, if it doesn't kill you outright, it's bound to make you stronger.
Yeah. Thank you.
And then eventually you find a balance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Lillian.
Thank you for the talk. I think it helped kind of point me to some of the areas in which I'm not maybe seeing clearly, and I really appreciated your checklist. So my family story is that Nikhil and I are expecting a baby, and my mom is planning to come out and help us, and I'm the one who's saying, I love and accept you and want your help, but I want you to come a little later than maybe you want to. And my mom is the one saying, you're going to need a lot more help than you realize. Please let me take more on. And so I've started to now hear the voice in my head that's talking to my mom, telling her I'm a grown person and I can take care of this on my own and blah, 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 blah. And I don't think I realized until today how much of that was just like myself being stuck in like that. I really want you to see things my way. And so I guess that's kind of the first step along that path to trying to hopefully see and understand the situation for like what it really is. But yeah, thanks for that checklist. I appreciated that.
Great. Well, there are probably no better teachers in our life than our families. Right. Yeah. Okay, everyone. It's been wonderful being with you. And I'd just like to end by sharing the merit of our practice today with all of the people who are dealing with fires and other disasters. And so let's just give a moment's thought to them. And may they all somehow be safe. Okay. Thank you, as always. It is a great privilege to be here with you.